called my talk tonight, A Battle Hard to Win. Imagine you're sitting meditating and you've decided to do some loving kindness meditation. And you've been very proactive before the meditation in sorting out who you're going to do the meditation towards. You know you're going to set it up first by reviewing the disadvantages of hatred and the benefits of practicing loving kindness to give you the motivation to do the practice. You've decided on who you're going to give towards. Of course, we start with ourselves, and then we move on to a respected person, then a dear friend, a neutral person, and then finally a hostile person. Now, that hostile person might be very much be somebody that we love, but that we're having a bit of a barney with, or it might be somebody who historically that you have got a resentment towards and you find it difficult to think nice thoughts about them. So you're true to your intention, you set it up in the right way and you follow through, and the meditation goes really well. You do it towards yourself, towards the respected person, thinking about their good qualities and wishing them well, dear friend, the neutral person. And then it comes to the hostile person, and then suddenly the whole thing grinds to a most dreadful halt as you find the mind gripped with the most terrible resentment towards this person and all the things they've done wrong towards you. And it's very painful. You find it very, very difficult to let go. The Buddha, in one of his most famous discourses called the Parable of the Saw, said that, talking to his monks, he said that even if low-down thieves should carve you limb from limb with a double-edged, double-handled saw, whosoever sets your heart at enmity for this reason is no doer of my teaching. Which is pretty strong, isn't it? So there you are, being carved limb from limb by low-down thieves. Well, I guess if they start at your ankles, they will be low-down. I really thought I should find a way of leavening this whole bit. But his point is accurate. You are no doer of his teaching if you set your heart to enmity. That's what he's saying. Obviously, it's an extreme example. But what he's saying is you're no doer of his teaching. And it's true. Resentment is polar opposite to the values of the Buddha's teaching and the aspirations of following his way. Resentment is a form of craving. It's wanting, like, passionately desiring life to be different than it is, and it's based in an ignorance, not understanding how life works, not understanding how the mind works, not understanding how life works. As a consequence, we can sum resentment up as a total mismanagement of the mind. It's just really not understanding the tool of the mind at all and using it all wrong. And the consequence is, of course, increased suffering. More pain, more suffering. And what's Buddha's teaching all about? It's all about letting go of ignorance, gaining wisdom and understanding of how mind works and how life works in order to experience a reduction in levels of craving and levels of consequent suffering. So he's absolutely, of course he's the Buddha, of course he's spot on, but it is actually the case that if you set your heart to enmity, you are no doer of the Buddha's teaching. And he encouraged all his students not to repay a hostile or angry person in kind. He really did encourage people to develop a heart of peace, an attitude of acceptance and non-hostility. So really, for any meditator, and I do know how, I've been there myself, I do know how hard it is when the mind becomes gripped in that way and that clinging attachment is really, really strong. It is difficult to let go. So what can we do about it? In a commentary to the Pali Canon called the Visuddhimagga, which is an excellent read, it's a very thick book, but it gives a very detailed commentary to the entire training, Buddhist training. There are lots and lots of suggestions for how to replace thoughts of resentment with more positive thoughts, how to reflect upon the resentment itself as a way of getting free of the problem. For instance, the Sudamaga talks about there being seven things that gratify our enemies. Our enemies are gratified by the thought, may they be ugly, may they experience pain, may they have no good fortune, may they have no wealth, no fame, no friends, and may they endure a bad future, an unfortunate rebirth. They're really not our friends, they really are our enemies. And what the Visuddhimagga points out is, of course, that when we enter into resentment, well, I'm sure we've all come across people who are angry and hostile. Do they appear beautiful at that time? Or do they appear rather ugly? Do you want to be their friend? Or do you want to steer clear from them? Well, of course you do. And what the Visuddhimagga is saying, well, you gratify your enemy by acting with resentment and hostility because you become the very thing that they want you to become. Ugly, no friends, no good fortune. You know what it's like when you're running resentment, how you drop things and clank into things and everything goes. So you're experiencing bad fortune, things get dropped, things go missing, unfortunate conversations with people because you're in a mood. So Visuddhimagga is saying, well, that's going to gratify your enemy. Do you want to gratify? When we say enemy, that is with inverted commas, because we're good Buddhists and we don't have enemies. Well, people say that, oh, well, I've got no enemies. Yeah, but you get annoyed with people from time to time, don't you? So it's in inverted commas. Okay. So, the idea is that if you're caught up, gripped by that resentment, take a step back. Think about it. Do you want to gratify the enemy by essentially giving them what they want? Here's another idea. Is the person that you're angry with controlled in body, speech, and mind? You're angry with them for a reason. Perhaps the reason is speech, that they are uncontrolled in their speech. It's common that, you know, at work or something, somebody's, you always get one, don't you? Always, it's pushing your buttons and finding faults through speech. But what about their bodily conduct and their mental conduct? Are they in control? And what the Visuddhimagga is suggesting is that those times, rather than dwelling on the source of the hostility, which may very well be the verbal, consider their bodily behaviour and consider their mental behaviour. Is that in order? And if it is, then dwell on that and think about that and see if through that you can therefore let go of that gripping resentment. If you're wondering what I mean by control of mind, I think every meditator has experienced being in a shrine room where everything's lovely and quiet except for one other meditator who's shuffling about, coughing all the time, causing a mental disturbance, causing a disturbance in the room, and you're thinking, my goodness, can't you just practice a little bit of mindfulness? Can't you just... That's what I do when I get angry, by the way. But, you know, we've all been there. I've got to admit it. Admit it, you have. And so what they're doing is they're not controlled in mind. But are they controlled in other ways? When you reflect upon them, are they actually quite urbane in terms of their speech? Or is their bodily conduct in order? Do you see what I mean? So it's dwelling on where they do control themselves. If it is that you really, you think about them and you can find no element of control in their behaviour at all, either body, speech or mind, then practice compassion. Because if they are so bereft of any control, then their future is going to get more and more painful for them. So that's an opportunity to practice compassion. And Visuddhimagga suggests that if upon reflecting like this you find that that quietens the mind, stills the heart, then perhaps you continue with your loving kindness practice. If not, then try something else. How about reflecting, for instance, that they upset you in their domain. Perhaps at work, there was an argument at work, and that's their domain. Why now are you allowing them to hurt you in your domain, which is your mind? What's the point in letting them trample all over your mind as well? And then you start, because this all starts to introduce the idea that actually maybe it's not their fault. And that maybe it's got more to do with us than the way our mind's working. So why let them in? Why let them in and dominate your mind at this time when they've been dominating you out there? Alright, what about this? Good Buddhists, trying to keep precepts, trying to be a virtuous individual. Well, this resentment is just gnawing away at all that hard work, isn't it? All that excellent work at restraint and developing positive qualities like metta and friendliness and generosity is all being gnawed away now through this resentment and all these thoughts of revenge and all these justifications and so forth. So that's another way of looking at it. Perhaps that might do it. Perhaps that might help you to see the light in this matter. Or perhaps you can reflect on the fact of how it is that in maintaining a resentment towards somebody who's been hostile towards you, you end up copying the very same ignoble acts. Acting out of that resentment, you end up doing exactly what they were doing to you. Now we're beginning to move into areas of such as condition-dependent origination. If you want a big example of that, look at how countries hold in the psyche of nations. They hold deep resentments about other nations. And how out of that resentment they end up, I don't want to be too political here, but they end up chucking bombs at them. And how the other nation is resentful because of that. And so what do they end up doing? Hurling rockets back the other way. It's just human nature. It's untrained human minds. You end up doing exactly the very self-same thing that you're criticising the other person for. So reflecting in that way, does that help you to release that tight grip of resentment of that person? Realising that you're actually just mimicking the very things that you are criticising them for. And the one that always used to work for me... Okay, do you really want to be a puppet for their provocation? Do you really want their provocation to so dominate your behaviour that you end up... I'm dancing again, aren't I? That you end up just dancing to their tune. When I considered that, it was like, whoa, what am I doing? It's like, this is my mind, this is my life. Why do I want that to be dominated by this hostile, aggressive, helpful influence. I don't want to dance to that tune. So in any of these ways, it's possible through this kind of reflection to let go. Of course, letting go implies, I hadn't thought about this at all, but it strikes me now, perhaps having to accept defeat. Or having to accept that you might be perceived as defeated. That's usually what it is. It's not so much the defeat, isn't it? It's somebody else perceiving you as having been the loser. And yeah, I can see a few people recognise this. It's true, isn't it? It's true. So it's got a lot to do with pride. And so letting go of the resentment. And we're talking about in the meditation, letting go of that resentment, that grip, that tight grip. So to allow you the opportunity to carry on with your loving kindness meditation, being able to just swallow and go, oh, okay, pain, what, that's the way it was, and to let it go, to allow it to be what it is. It takes some doing. Oh, maybe that's why I called it a battle hard to win. I think it must have been. All right. So the Vasudha Marga goes on. If none of this has worked for you, then consider ownership of deeds. Karma, what people understand as karma. There's lots of different angles to this. The way karma or karma works is really quite straightforward once you've got a handle on it. What we experience through the senses and through the mind is resultant experience. It's the result of past experience. We need to have a body. We need to have eyes, ears, nose, tongue. We need the physical body and we need a mind. And we experience the results of our actions through the sense doors. So at this moment, everyone is experiencing resultants through eye, ear, nose, taste. Well, not so much taste. Hopefully not so much nose. But definitely through sound and through vision at the moment. You're experiencing the results of your actions. Now, it's what you do in response now which determines the kind of future that you have. So there's a passive side, the side that just experiences, which is passive, meaning that it just happens, and there's nothing more to it than that. But then, the way we respond, our volitional activity, the way we respond to events now, determines the kind of future that we've had, or we will have. So if it is in the past, we're remembering now, in the past, a hostile act towards us, that action in the past, that event, was itself the result of karma. So even if that person was being hostile to you, and even if you didn't think it was justified, you were still experiencing the results of past actions. And at that time, there was a resistance, and we said, no, it shouldn't be like this. This is wrong. And so there was a rejection of reality. And so now, when a memory of that event arises in the mind, and we feel that same pain, then habitually the same response of rejection arises in the mind. And we go, no, it shouldn't be like this. So essentially we go through it all over again. We re-experience the results of our actions, and then we engage in more volitional activity right there in that moment. That's the basis of karma. Karma vipaka, action and result. So, is it possible to take ownership of your deeds? But to perhaps say, well, actually, maybe it's better that I experience that resultant rather than rejecting it. Because through experiencing it, it will then have produced its result, and then it disappears, it goes away, it ceases. And it is because we don't understand the way this process works that we keep on picking it up and biting again and experiencing another painful feeling and then going, oh, it shouldn't be like this, and experiencing it again. Because to go through the process of saying, oh, it shouldn't have been like that, you have to experience that event all over again. Even if it's in your own mind as a memory, the very act of saying, I don't want that to be there, it's a bit like, you know, don't think of a blue elephant. The moment you don't think of a blue elephant, you're thinking of a blue elephant. So the moment you say, oh, it shouldn't have been like that, you've recreated the whole problem and you experience another painful feeling. And that's how you get this grip, this tight grip. The very attempt to get rid of the thing you don't want is reproducing it again and again and again. So wouldn't it be better in that instance, in that case, to accept ownership of deeds? There's the opposite side of the coin to this, which is if somebody has been hostile to you, then they're going to have to experience the results of their actions too. So it's not like you get away with it. Nobody gets away with anything with the law of karma. You have to experience the results of your actions. That's the way it works. It's like throw something up in the air, it falls back down to the ground. So recognizing that the way you respond now is going to change your future, does that influence the way you choose to deal with the resentment that's in your mind? Perhaps reflecting that I am the owner of my deeds. What kind of future do I want for myself? Do I want this to just repeat forever? Or do I want to do it differently now? Do I want to let it go and be free of it? Yes, there's another aspect to karma which includes rebirth. The Buddha said on this long round, this long infinite round of rebirths that we've had, that it's incomprehensible to believe that the person that you're hostile with has not at some stage been your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your son, and your daughter. And when I considered this, I kind of went, yee, because I thought, well, the moment I've said that, I'm going to look at everyone, and then I thought, oh my goodness, you've been my mother. Each one of you has been my mother. That's kind of weird. That is really, really weird. And my daughter. The point being, I think that the nub of this is he's trying to get us to look at people and see their humanity, and to see that this person that you're hostile with is really just a reflection of you. It's just another you. And that we do actually all, I don't know quite how to put it, but we do all understand each other. If you open up to mindfulness, the more you open up and become mindful of what a human being really is, you kind of sense that, you know, you understand, in at least general terms, what other people go through too, because we're not so very different. And this idea that we may have been had close relationships in the past is just helping us to see that hostile person in a more beneficial light, in a more benevolent light, if I can put it like that. Or with the intention of helping just release us from that grip of resentment. I certainly know people, I don't know how it is with you, but I've met people that I've made an instant bond with when I've met them, and I've also met people with instant I've met them, we have disliked each other intensely. And it's just not logical, because we've never met. Or have we? So, there's that you can consider too. If that doesn't work, you can reflect on the benefits of loving-kindness. There are many benefits that come with practicing loving kindness. You sleep well, you have pleasant dreams, you wake up happy, you're dear to humans, you're dear to non-humans, you're protected by the deities, fire, poison. Oh, I had a bit of tummy one night last week, and it was at the weekend actually, and I had to sit over the... It's horrible, you don't want to know this, but I had to, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had to sit over the loo, because I thought I was going to be sick, and I was there for a little while. And I thought, I cannot remember the last time I felt like that. It's like poison, just very... I mean, I know we're very good the way we're very hygienic here. But it's just that's strange that it happened. And I think that... Don't underestimate these as benefits. What were some of the other benefits? Yep, serene countenance. When it comes to dying, you die unconfused, and your future in terms of rebirth is very good because of the way that you've chosen to use your mind. So does that help, reflecting on those? Does that help to release that grip of resentment? Another useful way of looking at this is to reduce that hostile person into what we call the elements. So instead of looking at them as a human being, reduce them to the actual elements that are at play. There are different ways you can do it. Say, you can practice what in Buddhism we call the 32 body practice, which is, say, the first few are hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. And then just ask yourself, what exactly in this amalgamation of different factors that we call a human being, what is it that you're actually angry with? Are you angry with their nail? Are you angry with their skin? Are you angry with their eye base or their ear base? Are you angry with consciousness? Especially when you start to reduce all this to and recognize the fact that all these elements are entirely transient, that they don't have any solid substance. So if you're practicing Vipassana meditation too, resolution of elements can show you that actually what you're annoyed with is a story, a narrative. Because when you really look, you can't find the person that you're angry with, because all you can find is a bit of mucus, a bit of phlegm, a bit of urine, a bit of sweat, a bit of hair, a bit of curly hair. There's just all these bits. Where is the person that you're so angry with? And you realise that actually you're holding a story in your mind, and it's the story you can't let go of. And what you can't let go of about the story is the painful feeling. So that really helps. And the Sutta Marga says, well, if all else fails, give him a gift. Not long after I'd entered into full-time training, I found out all about this. And one day, someone knocked on the door and just said, here you are, here's a gift. And I went, he doesn't like me. It was tongue-in-cheek. But yeah, it can do amazing things. Just that simple act of giving a gift can... Because the whole thing with resentment is that person's hostile with you in just the same way as you're hostile with that person. The moment... And it's all brinkmanship, isn't it? The one moment somebody goes, all right, I give up. Here's some after-eights for you. And the person goes, oh, he's giving me after-eights. And suddenly it just all collapses. Other confectionery is available. Okay, but underlying all of this, so I hope some of those reflections might help you. Understanding the process, though, is the key. Understanding how it is that there is some kind of contact, sense contact, say, at the time it might be hearing something, somebody says something harsh to you and there is a painful feeling, and then there is a response of aversion, a response of wanting life to be different, and then all the justification and condemnation that goes on with that, what we call clinging attachment. Subsequently, it might be a memory of that event, and that memory is the contact, and that produces a painful feeling, and then there's all the mental volitional activity that begins from there. It's understanding that process that will set you free from the problem. It's understanding the contact and understanding that actually it's not the person you want to get rid of, it's the feeling that you want to get rid of. It's the painful feeling. That makes it a lot more intimate. It's a lot less to do with other people, it's more to do with understanding the processes of the mind. If it is that it is wanting to get rid of the painful feeling which is causing your aversion, and you have enough faith, enough commitment, enough willingness to just remain with that painful feeling and not try to get rid of it, you have the opportunity then to see truly for yourself that painful feelings do not last. You don't have to do anything to get rid of the problem other than be mindful of it and observe and see that the painful feeling does not last unless you choose to recreate it. It actually doesn't last. It's the nature of everything to arise and pass away. In the untrained mind, there is just a blind reaction that says, I hate that, and then immediately we re-experience it. With training, you're able to rest with whatever it is, simply observing the true nature of what it is that occurs in this process. That's what sets you free from the resentment. And there is a stage on every path where you have developed such equanimity in regard to seeing how transient everything is, that there is a stage that comes where you're so equanimous that you see that process in just the most perfect detail, and you see that it is an entirely impersonal process. There is a contact, a memory, feeling, painful, habitual response arises, there's no reaction, habitual response passes away. Contact passed away, feeling passed away, habitual response passed away. There was no self in any of it. There was nothing that needed to be done other than develop the wisdom to see that process. And ultimately, that's what we're responsible for. That's why I talk so much about having to take responsibility, taking proper responsibility. Now, some people, when I say take responsibility, say, Paul, I'm fed up of blaming myself. I was, well, I'm not talking about blaming yourself. If it is that you're blaming yourself, then taking responsibility means ceasing to blame yourself. That's what taking responsibility means. But ultimately, if you want to get free of the problem, really, you have to take responsibility and say, it's not the other person. It's not the other situation. It is about me taking responsibility for the processes that are ongoing in my mind. In Buddhism, they talk about this, you know when you've really cracked this whole resentment issue. In loving kindness practice, we call it the sign of breaking the barrier. So that you practice loving kindness to everyone equally in the same way. So the hostile person ends up being treated with exactly the same amount of friendliness as your dearest friend. And they say in the books, they give the example of, well, imagine that you were all together. You, the respected person, the dear friend, the neutral person, and the hostile person. And then some more low-down thieves came along and said, one of you, we've got to take one of you away and kill you. Oh, it's quite intense, isn't it? But anyway, you are unable to choose. You cannot choose between any of them, including yourself. It's not even that you can put yourself forward and say, take me. You cannot choose between them. And that's the illustration to say that that's the point you reach where you cannot see anything between any of the people. There is no judgmentalism between them, saying this person is worth more than that person. And although that's not enlightenment, it has the flavour of enlightenment. Because with enlightenment, there is the complete comprehension that really there is no separation at all. Yes, resentment is impossible in the enlightened mind. It's like trying to keep a mustard seed on the point of a needle or something. It just falls off. It just cannot stay. Because the enlightened mind has realized that whatever the story is not real. Whatever story it is, that you're telling yourself about this person or that person, with all the judgmentalism and all the separating out that goes on. The enlightened mind knows that they're all false. Because the enlightened mind knows that life is no more real than a picture drawn on the surface of water. It's so completely beyond our normal way of understanding the world. And the enlightened mind realizes, I know this is something I've said before, but it just keeps coming back, you can't hold a resentment to anything out there because you understand that it's all part of the same intrinsic reality. The appearance of separation is only that, it's only an appearance. It's only an expression, it's not something that has any solidity to it. And so the enlightened mind has no craving for life to be different. Just cannot find any imperfection in any of it. And whatever it is, the pattern that emerges, even if it is somebody being hostile, that's just the emergence of a pattern. That's all it is, just an emergence of a pattern. And the enlightened mind knows intrinsically what is, in terms of that hostility, where there may be some something that might be valid in what they're saying, and where it's just purely that person's neurotic tendencies being projected outwardly. And pretty much 99 times out of 100, it's that. gone over again. So there's some reflections on what to do if you do get gripped by that resentment. And the pursuit of the observation of transience really does lead to the most incredibly profound understanding of life, which can't be gained, I don't think, in any other way. But maybe there are other ways, but I don't know what they are.